Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Bitcoin Veteran Spaces. My name is Coleman, and I am your host this morning, and today is episode 47, and it is Wednesday, Choptober 23rd. I want to give a warm welcome to everybody who's listening, who's tuning in, who's making a mad scramble to refill their coffee, their tea, their water, or trying to use the restroom really quick so they can sit down and enjoy the space with me this morning. I really appreciate everybody out there listening to this and tuning in every single weekday at 10 o'clock. I see friendly faces out there, familiar faces as well. I see Wade, Steve Kelly, AC Hunter. I see Q, Aaron, Jeevis, Craig, Jesse, KG, Jack. I appreciate all of you guys and girls tuning in with me every morning. But while we're still trickling in and everyone's getting the gunk out of their eyes, it's over on the West Coast, I want to make sure everyone understands the reason we're doing this, and that's to spread the message that is Bitcoin. And what is that message? It's to show the world that we don't need a centralized authority to tell us what to do, and we don't need that control. We can do everything we can with freedom technology and a decentralized currency, going out there and proving that what our founding fathers fought for is extremely important to us, and we are going to continue what they laid out for us. And we're making that very clear with our efforts to helping everybody affected by Hurricane Helene in North Carolina with Operation Gabriel. Again, I want to give a huge thank you to everybody who's helped us with that. We've raised over $115,000, and we're using those funds to help everybody directly affected through that storm. So we're still needing volunteers to go out and help with the relief effort. It's getting a lot colder out, so we're trying to provide everybody with warm clothing, blankets, jackets, heaters, furnaces, fuel to operate these heating devices, and also trying to get feed for all the livestock that have been affected during that flood, wiped out everybody's stores. So we need to make sure that we're pushing forward and we're not forgetting about everybody that's been affected by this storm. So we have a post up in the nest, and please go ahead and retweet that. Let's make sure that we're not forgetting about everybody that's been involved. And I believe we're going to have Jordan on the Operation Lipitas handle joining us today. And once he gets on here, I'd like to get him. He was there last week, so we'll have firsthand account of exactly what's going on with Operation Gabriel. I see we have Lisa Huff just join us. Good morning, ma'am.
Good morning, guys.
Lisa, I can't remember if I asked you yesterday, but I'm going to ask you again. How was peer-to-peer in Santa Monica over the weekend?
Oh, you didn't ask me yesterday, but yesterday's conversation was fantastic, by the way. Santa Monica, you know what? I didn't realize how much was planned for last week. I had always been planning to go to Don Bay's proof of workforce. I'm on the board of his organization. And so I knew I would go out there for that. And it was held on the 3rd Street Promenade. They had booths set up all down the promenade, and some of the local storefronts were participating in things. We had a pickleball tournament. There was actually there in Santa Monica on this promenade in one of the retail spaces. I don't think it was like an Old Navy store, but it was something like that. They turned it into a pickleball center. So it really a cool use of former retail, empty retail. So anyway, there was a pickleball tournament. But Bitcoin Magazine, being Bitcoin Magazine, set up this phenomenal news desk. Actually, I think Dom built the desk by hand. But Bitcoin Magazine brought their production crew, turned it into a news desk. And then we did interviews all day long. We did kind of panels. And so the Lana Negretti, who's the vice mayor of Santa Monica, was there for, I think, most or all of the day. It was just like state senator, the guys that started the Bitcoin Club at USC and UCLA, Kyle and Damian, were there. it was fantastic. I mean, there were just, the promenade was full. And from what Lana, the vice mayor, had said, you know, on a Friday, normally the promenade's pretty, not empty, but, you know, it's just normal kind of street traffic. It was full. It was like a festival. So that was fantastic. The day before that, Swan had an event. And so they had, I guess, like maybe a lot of their private clients were there. Maybe it was open to others. I'm not quite sure. But it was packed. They had it in the ballroom of Hotel Casa Del Mar, which is where their party was last year. One of their events was last year. And it was just a fantastically done, you know, kind of day right on the ocean. The patio doors opened. You could walk right outside. You were on the beach. They had great speakers, Bob Burnett and others, super interesting. So, and then I guess Fred Krueger's event was the same day as Peer to Peer. So then at night, it just turned into this amalgamation of everybody that was there for all these different events, you know, hanging at the bar at Casa Del Mar or the bar at Shutters. Oh, Unchained had a big party at Shutters one night. I mean, beautiful rooftop event with actually some real stars like in the Bitcoin space, not like influencer stars, but like people that you hardly ever see at parties.
Were there. Are you allowed to name drop so we know?
Yeah, I mean, probably because they were there. Dustin Trammell was there for starters. You know, I mean, I think he was on the original mailing list. Alan Lane, the former, I'll get the title wrong, but I think he was president of Silvergate Bank. I mean, he is a wonderful man. You know, he, yeah, it was just a cool, cool group of people, had kind of gathered, and, it was just very joyful, you know, very optimistic and joyful. And, so wonderful way to kind of turn what I guess was Pacific Bitcoin, you know, when they decided to not do that, the scale of that event this year, you know, Swan very generously offered to, you know, take some of, I think this is my understanding, is that they offered, you know, hey, since we've put deposits down at hotels, you know, we're going to help folks pay for hotel rooms, get folks out here. Let's support all these other events that are going on. So it was very community building. A lot of folks drove in from all over kind of the West Coast to attend. I met some really cool people from Lake Arrowhead and Lake Tahoe and Northern California. Just a whole bunch of people I'd never met before or seen before were out in force. And, you know, again, when you're just around Bitcoiners and you realize how big the space is, how many people are just out there that we don't know about, like, gives me a ton of hope.
That's awesome. So you highly recommend going to conferences and hanging out with other Bitcoiners in real life because we're a lot cooler than we are online.
I think so. I mean, I think Bitcoin is the ultimate value alignment tool. And rarely, if ever, I would say almost never at a Bitcoin conference do you have small talk with someone. It is immediately like you know them, you have this sense of, at least I get this sense of what their family is like. You know, you can stand around and talk about real things, not fake things. It's just, it's wonderful. Huge, huge advocate for in-person events, even if you've got to spend Bitcoin to do it.
Absolutely. So that's a perfect segue, and I'm glad you lined me up for this, Lisa. Bitcoin Alaska, July 5th and 6th. We have Wade in the audience. I think we're just like less than a week away from getting the website up and be able to start really pushing a lot of the events. It's going to be an amazing time. If you've never been to Alaska in the summer, you are missing out. Juneau is a beautiful place. And there's going to be so many Bitcoin-related activities. It's family-friendly, so you can bring your wife, Bitcoin's high enough, your girlfriends, your kids. And it'll be just an amazing event. So it'll be July 5th and 6th, but we recommend getting out here a little early on the 1st and staying a little after for all the pre and post conference activities. But we'll have more information probably by middle of next week. We'll be able to start making the website, and I think ticket sales will start going pretty quick. So again, stay tuned for more information with that. I want to say good morning to Yomar and Jordan on the Operation Libertas handle. Jordan, I got a question for you, sir. Did you choose violence or peace this morning?
I choose peace every morning. Sometimes my words are just aggressive.
It's understandable. Do you want to give us a little update then on Operation Gabriel? What you guys were doing last week?
Yeah, let's see. I got back a couple days ago and been handling some home and family stuff. So still been busy as far as that goes. But as far as Operation Gabriel, spent a week out there with Mike and Shane. Was a really rewarding experience. A lot of uplifting, heartwarming stories, and a handful of kind of sad stories. So basically what we did is we spent the time there, handing out generators and, heaters to people. I think the first or second day we were there, we got a report that 15 people had died of, hypothermia. So that was obviously a big issue that we were trying to help with. There's going to be probably more of that here in the next few days, or few weeks and months as we get more into the winter. But we're doing a good job of getting generators and heaters out to people and seeing what else people need, going to their homes and talking to them. We've also partnered with PCCR, which is a Plain Compassion Crisis Response, who's got a mission to heat 1,500 homes in the area. So partnering with them to identify homes that need generators and heaters has been great. Partnering with the Christian Rangers to continue to build kind of the intel picture out there to see where help is needed. One of the more awesome things was getting up on top of Big Bald Mountain and setting up a repeater, and connecting with Meshtastic from Raleigh to Charlotte to Johnson City to Knoxville, all the way down to Atlanta. That was amazing to see and to have people use that network now. And I think Shane wants to make it his mission to hike the AT and be like Johnny Appleseed, throwing up Meshtastic repeaters all up and down that to help build out the network. I don't really want to speak for him, but I think he might be going to TabConf and speaking with some developers and stuff about kind of some of the lessons learned as far as Meshtastic goes, how it could be better employed and utilized, and maybe some tweaks here and there to make it dummy proof for those of us who have to hike a mountain twice to go fix some of the settings. After our comms guys back in the rear told us, you put it in repeater mode, right? Okay, well, we know now. We also had the opportunity to, as we were conducting all of our missions, to have a Washington Post journalist, like freelance journalist, follow us around. She was trying to get, and she followed the Christian Rangers around too for the last like week or two, trying to tell the story of what veterans are doing out there in North Carolina. So that was a good opportunity. The next day, we actually were able to link up with a reporter from the Epoch Times and her husband, who is the photographer, and got to cut, same thing, ran around conducting all our missions, and getting, we got a lot of, as many locals as we could find. Hopefully they will get their stories out, because there's not, you know, most of the media and stuff is centered around Asheville and the population center. They're either afraid or unwilling to come further into some of the harder hit areas, or just don't have a connection or intel to know where to go. So we tried to use that opportunity to link them up with locals and get their stories out. So hopefully in the next couple weeks, you guys will have a little more, reporting as far as that goes. And we will be sitting down once we all kind of get our, family lives back in order and to sit down and do a podcast where we give everybody an update of what we've done so far and what our plan is moving forward. But one of the most like amazing things I would like to point out is, you know, it was awesome that because of this community, we were able to raise, I think, over $115,000. And I haven't done like the tally yet, but I think 30 to maybe 40 at the highest end is what we've spent so far. It's very hard to spend $100,000. I don't know how the government does it so quickly with hundreds of millions of dollars. I guess we're being a little more strategic and we're getting things into the proper hands and we're not staying in hotel rooms. So that helps bring down costs a lot. And we also have a longer time horizon. We know we want this to last for the next couple months. And if we happen to exhaust all those funds, we will reach out back to the Bitcoin community and see if we can't get more support. But for now, I think we're on a good trajectory to use these funds strategically and smartly and efficiently.
Well, that's amazing. Yes. And so again, just another reason why the Bitcoin community is amazing. We did raise over 115,000. And the reason that we're so effective is that we don't have the big government bloat. We don't have to go through six different people just to do a task. If it needs to get done, we just go out and do it. We don't need permission. So again, huge thank you to everyone who's supporting us with this. A huge thank you to Shane, Mike, I see in the audience, and Jordan for going out there. Randy Kelly, Hunter, I know you guys were directly involved. If anybody else was and I haven't mentioned you, I'm very sorry.
But real quick, just a huge shout out to all the people on the background working back in support that still have to go to their day jobs, but we're helping what seemed like around the clock somehow to coordinate intel and logistics and stuff on the back end. So many people that I will forget to name them all, but so many people in the background because of not just Bitcoin veterans, not just Bitcoiners, not just veterans, but people from all over who just wanted to chip in and help in any way they can. So a huge thank you to everybody that has helped.
Absolutely. And Mike, if you want to come up here and talk or add anything else, you're more than welcome to join. And I just want to say good morning to Gary Leland. I see you in the audience. If you want to join as well, we'd love to have you up here. So I want to roll right into today's topics. There's a lot to choose from, but I think we definitely need to start covering some of the things that are going on globally. When you take a step back and look at everything that's happening in the world right now with the war in Ukraine, what's going on in the Middle East, it's a very weird timeline to be in for myself. There's just a lot going on. So I just want to kind of clear up the air and make sure everybody understands what's going on. So the BRICS summit is going on right now in Kazan, Russia. I'm going to go on all the way till Friday. And I think this is important to talk about because you have some of the largest economic, the strongest economies going here talking about how they can go ahead and start getting away from the USD and having a multipolar world. And so, Eomer, I'm going to start passing this over to you because I know this is in your wheelhouse. But can you explain the significance of what's going on with the BRICS for anybody who may be unaware or anybody who just kind of brushes it off as a nothing burger?
Yeah. So the real short version is, BRICS is, So BRICS is a group of countries. Like BRICS itself stands for Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. It's grown to, I forget how many countries, a ton of countries. A lot of like the quote, like global South is now part of BRICS. Recently I saw things with like Pakistan wanting to join BRICS. I forget, I think Turkey expressed interest or is, you know, exploring that as well.
Turkey's at this summit right now.
Yeah. So the big thing is it's a counter to like the Western dominance of the like economic and financial markets and everything like that. The big thing that should like stand out for Americans, or at least it shows up in the news a lot, is BRICS pushing for a currency alternative to the dollar. Places are starting to recognize the the weaponization of the dollar and, you know, the fact that it's being inflated away. I think that is going to, as we get more debt and more of our economy goes towards paying off that debt, like a higher percentage, you know, we'll fall back into that age-old trap of just trying to inflate the debt away. And as that becomes clearer and clearer to be the cause, I think that there's going to be a higher and higher incentive for nations to move off of the dollar. So what we see, what's important about what's going on now is the fact that it's in Russia. The West has been trying to paint this narrative of Russia being isolated and alone and, you know, this rogue state. And this just completely flies in the face of that. And then to exacerbate it even more is like what we're doing in support of Israel and the ongoing, you know, genocide there. If you look at like the way the UN like votes have been going, essentially the entire world is aligned against what Israel is doing, and we are giving them a blank check. So we're basically destroying our own reputation. We are exhausting all of our political capital, and as well as our financial capital and our munition resources, and all of this stuff is all being exhausted on behalf of supporting that. And it's just really underlining like the fact. I'd interpret it as like the fact that these other countries need a different option, right? Like that what gave us legitimacy for such a long time is that we were a, you know, like quote beacon of freedom to the world, right? We do, despite all the things we did wrong, we did a lot of things right. And part of that came from like the beliefs espoused in our founding documents, you know, the Bill of Rights, the Declaration of Independence. Those things were key to us being able to get to that position of world dominance. You know, if you look during the fall of the Ottoman Empire, the people in the Levant actually voted to be a colony of the United States because they saw those values and they valued, you know, human beings value freedom, right? So they wanted that. They didn't see us as the colonial power like they did the British or the French. You know, obviously that's not
real
what
quickie,
happened.
Omar, I would add, can you explain what the Levant is? Because most people probably don't know what that term means.
Like Lebanon, Palestine, that area there. There was a King Crane Commission where they were trying to explore the options to, after the fall of the Ottoman Empire, and you know they wanted in Syria. I left out Syria. They wanted to join. You know that was the outcome. They saw that the United States wasn't a colonial power, where these other countries were, and they were leaning in that direction. We ignored that. We ignored their requests not to put, you know, Zionist immigrants in the land, you know, that led to where we are today. You know, if you want to pull on that thread, there was warnings that would lead to constant military conflict. And, you know, we can see who, Woodrow Wilson, who campaigned on peace and then led us into World War I and created the Federal Reserve and the income tax and all these, machinations that he put into place that allow for constant war. So if anybody ever tells you anybody but Woodrow Wilson is the worst president of the United States, they're lying or they're incorrect. It's always going to be Woodrow Wilson for so many reasons. Every time you think you found all the reasons why he's the worst president, there's always another one. Like today I found out that during his administration, leading in like Mother's Day used to be a pacifist day because of the, you know, what Butler, General Butler called the love that mothers hold for their sons, you know, in face of war. And around the time we entered World War I, it abandoned that like framework of Mother's Day and just became, you know, give some cards to your mothers because we're going to send them to war anyway.
By the way, I don't mean to interrupt you, Mark, because you're on a great roll here. I just wanted to add that those who haven't heard of Smedley Butler, he's the one who wrote the book War is a Racket. He was a general that got particularly disenfranchised by what he realized the U.S. military industrial complex was being utilized for.
Yeah, and if you haven't read War is a Racket, you definitely should. And I wrote an article, War is Still a Racket, that kind of takes another look at stuff, and it's just as bad. In fact, actually, it's worse than it was before because now it's such in the open and so ingrained. I mean, we had 110 years, 115 years of it being ingrained into our society. It's obviously going to have more power. But back to the topic we were talking about, BRICS, I think. So what we're seeing is that, you know, we are isolating ourselves because of like how we're handling what's going on between Israel and Palestine, and how we've handled it for so long. You know, it's basically we've shunned the things that allowed us to gain this foothold in the world. And we are weakening ourselves. Anybody can see that we are weakening ourselves. If you look at the statements from the people in charge of the strike group that were sitting off of Yemen, they called it like the most difficult, I'm paraphrasing here, but like the most difficult naval combat they've seen since World War II. That's against Yemen. Yemen's one of the poorest countries in the world. The fact that they can, you know, put us up against the ropes like that, and they're still operating, they're still striking, they're still able to strike against Israel, they're still able to strike ships in the area and stuff like that. So basically, one of the poorest countries in the world, because of the proliferation of drone and missile technology, is able to tell the quote most powerful navy in the world to go kick rocks. And that, I don't think, is being lost on these other powers in the world. So there's a lot of things working against us, right? Like, part of our package is that, you know, we give you these advanced fighters and all this technology, and it kind of ties you to us because you need like these software updates, or otherwise the fighters will stop working. You need these maintenance packages, so you're constantly indebted to us, right? It's like a lease program where you're always paying for stuff in order to keep using it. And then you see on the flip side of it, you know, these non-state actors that, you know, just have these easy to use, easy to maintain, easy to build missiles and drones that can, you know, not necessarily like compete one-to-one, right? But they can definitely disrupt and give an advantage to the actors, and it kind of allows them to hold on to their sovereignty a lot more than what we are offering. So I think all of that is going to, it's working against us, right? So that is what the significance of the BRICS is. You know, there we see that Putin is not nearly as isolated as we like to pretend he is. And that's without even factoring in the fact that European countries are evading our sanctions to trade with Russia because they need gas and stuff from Russia. So, you know, we're just completely overplaying our hands as the United States of America. We're not taking into account the realities of today. And part of it is that we have, like, the average age of Congress is probably, like, 70-something. And they haven't really thought of anything new since, you know, 1990, when we were, like, an unchallengeable superpower. But a lot has changed, and we have to kind of adapt to that. And, you know, if you look at the Bitcoin Veterans Bulletin, they talk about how Putin mentioned the multipolar world. And I 100% agree that that's what we're shifting to. And we need to shift our policies to not collapse when that happens.
I also think it's really important to mention that there's the other leaders in the world are challenging us. I want to dive right into this too. North Korea, was just confirmed by the Pentagon that they've sent 10,000 troops to Russia, North Korea, to help the fight against Ukraine. So that's a significant escalation in that region, in that war. And it's starting to show the alliances going on. And to counter that, South Korea said that they're going to start sending munitions to Ukraine to counter North Korea's tactics and rhetoric. And so the reason I bring this up is just when you start looking at all the events going on, we're at a very, very slippery slope, and things can escalate extremely quickly with one move, with one action, with, you know. So I just want to make sure everybody's aware of that. Mike, I see your hand up, so I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, Golan, you didn't cut me off at all. I wanted to wait for you guys to get your points across before I could chime in. I also wanted to add to this conversation that, starting with the Korea topic, we've also seen North Korea demolish some of their bridges that are connecting north and south through the DMZ, which is says to me that they're preparing for a potential military conflict between the north and south, and also says to me that North Korea is doing, so this is speculation on my part because I have not seen any direct intel that's reporting this, but what it says to me is that North Korea is likely working with China to help push out U.S. U.S. influence in the Southeast Asian arena. And then on top of that, something that I've been saying for years that is proving to be very true now is that we are witnessing the beginning of the unification of the Asian continent. And that needs to be very, very intimately kind of like conceptual, because the Asian continent unifies under whatever flag that may take. Russia has the land that can facilitate being their own little breadbasket on top of the land that Ukraine has. The United States tends to like have the Midwest wrapped up as the quote unquote breadbasket of the world. And it's just, it's patently just like it's not true in its entirety, right? And if the Asian continent does continue to unify, they're going to have significant economic and military power. And the U.S. and allies need to really be thinking about what that looks like going into the future, because the U.S., like we've all said, like Coleman and Yomar and Jordan have said this morning, we are just not the power that we were back in the 90s. And that's something that I think that the American population and Western developed nations are going to have a really hard time wrestling with. And that, like, the economic power in particular is going to be very, very important for not just economics and inflation, because you have to consider the shadow banking system over in Europe with the euro dollar system, which, for those that don't know what the euro dollar system is, that is the U.S. dollars that are circulating through the European continent that are not, they're just simply not accounted for. And what happens when the U.S. dollar system continues to weaken and those dollars exit hands and flow back to the United States and contribute to the inflation problem even further?
Yeah. Sorry, I was just doing something on the side, so I missed your last little bit, Mike. But I think the countries can see that we can't fight the wars physically, and back with leadership, we just have nobody that's competent that can take charge. And if I was an enemy of the United States, I would time if I was going to attack or do something big, I would time it around that chaos or that uncertainty. So a lot of people think that there might be a white swan before the election, or a black swan, sorry. If I was going to bet, and if seeing how things are lining up in Ukraine, in Russia, Taiwan, in the Middle East, I would probably put a heavy wager that's going to happen post the election during that uncertain time when we can't even figure out who's really in charge. But also if there's a change in administration, that seems like a good time as well to sow a lot of chaos, because people don't really know their roles yet. So the reason I bring it up again, I just want to make sure everybody's aware of what's going on, and just make sure that we're all just kind of prepared for anything that could take place. And so,
yeah. And just to tie it back to Bitcoin, with the BRICS and like all this, like the issues that we're seeing, right? So we talked about like the geopolitical stuff. And like the reason that I see Bitcoin as an option is that if you look at the BRICS currencies, they all devalue faster than the dollar, right? Because everybody's playing the same kind of game, right? But if, and this is in terms of like gold purchasing power, but if you stack that up next to Bitcoin, you know, Bitcoin's the clear winner, right? And then think of like how large BRICS is, right? Like how many countries would have to sign on to like, okay, let's give like who, Russia, China, India, any of these countries like the power that the United States has right now. I don't think any of them want that, right? Like I think so to me it's like, how do these countries come together with, how do they form an alternative currency or money system that doesn't, you know, they're going to lose a little sovereignty, I guess, because they're not going to have their own like, you know, currency that they can use inflation tools and shit like that. But How can they do something that they don't lose their sovereignty to another state? And to me, the answer to that is Bitcoin, right? Especially when you think like a lot of these countries are energy rich, you know, so like they can, you know, switch their economy. They can have like miners standing by. They can mine Bitcoin. They can gain some control through that. You know, if the prices shift or if they want the prices to shift, they, instead of just like stopping the manufacturing, like we see OPEC do, they'll raise and lower their manufacturing quotas. They can shift it. They can say, okay, well, we're not going to adjust, but instead of selling it on the market right now, and the market is, not doing good for us, instead we'll just, you know, we'll put it into this this power plant, and we'll burn it, and we'll you know, we can mine Bitcoin with it, and we're not losing out on that economic power. So that's where I see, I think that's the other aspect of, that's the Bitcoin aspect of BRICS. I think that is a real potential solution that they could come to. And I think it's very convenient that the ECB went on attack right as this BRICS thing started to kick off. That kind of sent like it reinforced my beliefs. You know, they were saying, oh, look at all the, you know, Bitcoin is bad. You know, the same kind of like lazy rhetoric they use to get you pearl war. They're trying to use that same tactic to get you anti-Bitcoin. Look at these people that had Bitcoin before you. You should hate them because they're going to make more money than you. You know, it's lazy, nonsense tactics. And I really think it's just trying to push back against the potential use of Bitcoin as an alternative currency by BRICS.
Yeah, and I don't think that the Fed report and the ECB report was a coincidence that they came out during this time. There's just, to me, that does not, when you step back and look at everything going on, it doesn't make sense. That was just a coincidence. But the whole BRICS adopting Bitcoin, it kind of falls right in line with Jason Lowry's book, Soft War, right? These countries are going to see the potential of it, and they're going to start utilizing it. And so I know that Jason's still involved with the military, but it'd be really interesting to get his views as to how he thinks things are going on. He keeps posting these cryptic tweets, you know, I wish I could say more, look what's going on. But it'd be really interesting to pick his brain. I know a lot of people have mixed feelings on him, but for myself, I think he's on track, and I think his book has, it may play out to be, he was 100% correct. Which is also crazy because his books are no longer available. They're only available like on the secondhand market, but they're retailing for like $300, $400 now. So there's definitely a demand for it. And it just kind of gives to the speculation that he could be right. So, and it's Foss, I see you out there. If you want to come on and talk about Jason, I know you, I'm not sure how close you guys were, but I know you have better insight than me. So if you want to jump on and share some details on that, I'd love to hear them.
I just want to jump in real quick and say I'm waiting for the price of software to hit 1K so I can cash out and buy Bitcoin.
Absolutely. Be a best trade. Well, I want to go ahead and cover some other things. I posted in the chat this morning, and I want to play a couple clips. They're kind of lighthearted. But I think just the timeline we're living in, if you think we're living in a matrix or you think just things are so weird, Jacob, just give me a thumbs up. We'll go ahead and play two clips back to back and we'll talk about them. And then I have another two clips that we'll play back to back. And it's just kind of funny from, they're both political, so I do apologize. But I think it's a good thing to go ahead and play this morning just because it's so silly. What each side is saying and the comebacks that they have. So, Jacob, whenever you're ready, sir, go ahead and play those two clips, and then we'll go ahead and dissect them.
I don't understand how we got so toxic and just so divided and so bitter, and I get why sometimes people just don't want to pay attention to it. And we all have friends like that. We have family members who are just like, you know, it's all a circus out there. I get that.
He is talking about doing away with the entire Department of Education. He's talking, he means it. This is not a joke. This is a guy who also wants to replace every civil servant, every single one. Thinks he has a right under the Supreme Court ruling on immunity to be able, if need be, if it was the case, to actually eliminate, physically eliminate, shoot, kill someone who is he believes to be a threat to him. I mean, so I know this sounds bizarre. It sounds like if I said this 5 years ago, you'd lock me up. We got to lock him up. Political document.
So they're confused. They don't understand how. Then the first video was Obama. So he doesn't know how we got so toxic. He doesn't know how we got down this road. And yet the president of the United States is now coming out saying we need to lock up a political rival. Just spreading misinformation. So, and we can go ahead and dissect this. For myself, I just think like the stories write themselves on this. This is just, it's child's play. Yeah, if anybody wants to just chime in right now, please feel free to jump in.
Oh, they're pandering. They're pandering to their audience. They're like the ridiculousness, especially of the Obama situation. Like he knows exactly how we got here. He has been playing a pivotal role for the last 12 years. The fact that he does, like to try and just claim that he doesn't know is literally just him pandering to his audience and like to the people he was specifically speaking to, of just like those people, like the people themselves might not know because they're busy working 2 to 3 jobs per adult per household because the inflation is so bad and the currency debasement is so bad that they can't afford to actually live a proper life and support their family and have the time to save and develop their passions and actually pay attention to politics on top of the muddied waters and the complication that politics has evolved into, like with like just it's yeah that I that's all I'm gonna say, or I'm gonna rant for the next 20 to 30 minutes because that stuff frustrates the hell out of me.
I think it also there's a huge shift happening right now. I mean, you've got Tulsi Gabbard and RFK joining up with Trump. Tulsi Gabbard said, I think it was yesterday, that she is joining the Republican Party. But then, of course, you have Republicans that are jumping ship and, you know, saying that people need to back Kamala. Of course, it just happens to be all like the warmongers of the last 20 years. And so, I mean, I know you started this off, Coleman, saying like you don't want to make this political, but it's like it's kind of getting borderline where it's not even political anymore. It's just I've said for a long time, for the last probably almost a decade, that I'm like, I'm never voting for a Republican or a Democrat again, because they're both just, they're the same freaking party. But we're actually seeing a divide of that uniparty is coalescing into one party. And there's kind of this new one being formed that actually seems to be a group of all some of the best people when it comes to defending freedom. And this is not, I don't mean this to sound like I'm telling people to vote for a certain candidate or a certain party. I'm just laying out what looks like the facts to me of one party seems to be in a major shift towards freedom and the other one towards money printing, war, and tyranny. And take with that information whatever you will. I mean, I still think that there's chances for these new parties to be co-opted just like the old ones. So be wary of that. Politics is not going to be the answer to some of our biggest problems. But it just seems pretty clear that one party is for tyranny and suppressing freedom of speech and just destroying the Constitution, and one of them still believes it. Even when I disagree with a lot of their policy decisions, their fundamental like defense of freedom, at least rhetorically right now, is correct.
No, yeah. I agree. Oh. I'm just going to push back real quick and then Omar, go for it. I think both parties are going to spend. That's the only thing I'd push back at. I don't think one party is going to spend more or less than the other. I think they're both going to spend crazy.
Yeah. In terms of spending, I wrote an article about, you know, Trump's response to COVID. You know, we basically printed money our way out of it. And if you look at the spike that happened during that, it's insane. You know, people will and can argue about, you know, if he didn't do it, how bad the economy would have been and all this stuff. But at the end of the day, they printed a ton of money. And the reality is if they're not talking about ending the Fed, then they're not good for the economy, in my opinion. Now, I think it's important that you noted the rhetoric doesn't always match the policy. but there is some good to at least the rhetoric being out there. And the main thing is that most Americans don't hear or read past the headline. So if they hear, you know, these wars are bad for us, that will stick. They won't usually get to all of the exceptions to that. You know, like if you look at J.D. Vance, he makes it very clear that he wants to end the war in Ukraine because he wants a war with Iran. But a lot of people won't get to that second part. So they'll just see that top line stuff and they'll say, okay, like, yeah, I agree with that. Wars are bad. And my hope is that it just gets more and more ingrained into the Republican Party that, you know, and it can return to what, you know, people pretended it was under Reagan, this small government party that's pro rights and stuff like that. That needs to be the focus, right? Like, I usually vote like libertarian myself, but we're not going to win the presidency. So the best thing we can do is to get, to make it like the ideals of the Libertarian Party become more aligned with, or make the ideals of the Republican Party more aligned with the Libertarian Party. I think that's the most effective way forward. If you're in, you know, I'm not going to tell people how to vote, but I am not in a swing state, so it doesn't matter who I vote for. So I'm writing in Thomas Massie because he's the only one in government that I feel represents me and supports America. So, if you're in a swing state, you know, make your own judgments, but, look at the whole picture of things and, you know, both of them suck, but, you know, you do you.
Yeah. One party definitely sucks a little bit less.
I'll accept that on some things.
No, but I think it's also important to realize that it took us a long time to get to where we are in the United States. There's a lot of corruption, a lot of greed, a lot of lying. And so it didn't matter if we had the best presidential candidate put into office on the 5th of November. It's not going to change in 4 years. There's just no way that that's possible. So it's very important that people have realistic expectations. It's going to be a slow grind. Think about it that, you know, you used to weigh 150 pounds. Now you weigh 300 pounds. You're not getting back to 150 in a week. It's going to take a long time, just like it took you a long time to put on that weight. So same thing with the policy, the changes in the government. Unfortunately, we got a long road ahead. One thing I do think, though, that will speed it up is getting to a sound money. And I think if we can start slowly incorporating a strategic Bitcoin reserve and getting that message out there, I think that will help. But again, I don't see it having an immediate effect on the change of where this country is going.
Yeah, and I think that's an important thing to note too. A long term, not that anybody in the short term is going to do anything to take us off the dollar. But if the collapse is going to come, the best thing we can hope for is that we're prepared for it as a country, and that would be the Bitcoin strategic reserve and maintaining or increasing gold. All of those like hard monies will, I think, help us wade through the chaos that would be, you know, the end of the dollar as the reserve currency. So
absolutely. And while I have your attention, I just want to give a quick thank you to our partners. Punchplate, I see out in the audience. Let's give them a thumbs up, a fist bump. But make sure you stamp your seed phrase in a metal plate. Check them out at punchplate.com. Paladin Tower Tactics, professional firearms training at paladintowertactics.com. Black Sheep Ammo, restock your ammo at blacksheepammo.com. And Solo Satoshi, decentralized Bitcoin mining at solosatoshi.com. So we're getting to the top of the hour. I want to play another little clip. It's kind of funny. It's Tim Walz and then Trump. So Jacob, give me a thumbs up whenever you're ready, and I will play this funny little clip for you. And I just want to give you some context. These two clips happen on the same day. I think Walz spoke 2 hours earlier and then Trump did. So here we go. Or maybe not just yet. Jacob, you ready, sir?
You know what you notice? It takes stamina to run for president. It takes stamina to be president. And Donald Trump does not have stamina.
I was going to hit her really hard on the trail today, but now I don't have to because she's off. No, I can't get over it. Who the hell takes off? You have 14 days left. And she'll take a couple of more days off, too. You know why? She's lazy as hell, and she's got that reputation. She's a radical left lunatic. She's further left than Bernie Sanders or Pocahontas. Now, Pocahontas...
We can stop it there, Jacob. Yeah, so context again. Those videos are like 2 hours apart. How Walz is saying Trump doesn't have the stamina to continue to be president. And here it is, his running mate, the president, Kamala Harris, is taking the day off because she's too stressed. So again, I just think we live in clown world. The timeline is very comical. If you guys want to talk about it, please feel free. I think both candidates are too old. I think there should be an age limit, but fire at will if you want to, guys and girl.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're, you know, Trump is pretty old, but what he says about Kamala is definitely true. In terms of comparing to Bernie, I think Bernie Sanders, at least prior to 2016, had some redeeming qualities. Some of them are resurfacing a little bit. His anti-war stance is pretty good. I don't know if Kamala Harris has any redeeming qualities. So, you know, there's that. and then, you know, like, the biggest shortfall for me with like Trump, like the thing that I wish he did is I wish he just picked Vivek instead of JD Vance. Like I would have been much more comfortable with Vivek as his running mate than Vance. You know, Vivek, like he doesn't seem to compromise on his America First stuff the way that Vance does. So I'd really wish I'd really like to hear more about like what he is planning for his cabinet. And I think if he put the right people in place in his cabinet, then, you know, there'd be like a better case for other people voting for Trump. But right now, like the question is like, did he actually learn from last time? Because 2016 candidate Trump was a lot better than the president Trump we got afterwards. So it'd be interesting to see like who he's planning to put in cabinet positions and stuff like that. Because I think that can make or break the case for voting for him. Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
I think Vivek makes a better asset if he has a cabinet position. I think it would be an awesome ticket to have a Trump Vivek president vice president. But I think for efficiency, I think he'd be better off in a cabinet role. Same thing with RFK. That would have been an awesome ticket to have as Trump and RFK. But I think RFK will be better suited as a cabinet position.
I actually like RFK being away from the ticket because I didn't like a lot of the stuff that he has, but I really like him on like health and food and that stuff. I think is like his really strong point where I think he brings a lot of value. So I like him being away from the ticket. The main thing with Vivek is like if he was the VP, he'd be up in line for presidency, whereas now presumably JD Vance will be up in line for presidency next. Questionable on how much I'll enjoy that run. I think Mike's got his hands up again, unless it's just stuck up.
Mike, you got your hand up, sir?
That might just be stuck waving around in the air there on my screen. So,
yeah, I see it stuck up on mine, too. No, that's okay. Well, we're going to get to the top of the hour. I have a hard stop here at in the next 5 minutes. So if anybody has anything they'd like to add to the conversation today, anything that we might have missed or touch on again, please, now's the time before I go ahead and start wrapping everything up. Okay. So first off, if you all could, I'm going to ask if you all can just throw a fist up, give me a thumbs up, throw me some hearts. I'm going to share something a little personal. But my wife, I want to give her a huge shout out and congratulations. She just finally finished her year-long treatment for breast cancer. So she just did her last infusion. And so she is, we're as happy as can be. We have one small minor surgery to move her port or her button, as she likes to call it. But I just want to give her a huge thank you and just let her know that she's a trooper. I don't know how she did it with a smile on her face every single day. You know, it's for anybody that's been affected, but with a loved one with cancer, it's absolutely crazy. But I just want to give her a huge shout out and just let her know I'm extremely proud of her and happy. sorry about that. So just wrapping everything up, I want to thank everybody who tuned in today. I want to thank everybody who's listening consistently through the week. It really means a lot to me. I really enjoy seeing our listener count increase. If there's anything that you want us to cover that we're not covering, shoot us a message, reach out to the Bitcoin Veteran handle, or reach out to me personally. And if we're able to cover it, we'll definitely go ahead and touch on it. So please don't be shy. And if you're a veteran and you've been listening, or even if you're not a veteran and you want to be more involved, reach out to us. We have a really large community and we're constantly growing, so we want to make sure we're helping everybody. Like Jordan said earlier in the show, please, we'll be doing a Bitcoin Veteran video podcast probably later this week. Jordan, or are we going to just do it on Tuesday?
That's a good question. We want to try to do it sooner rather than later. It's just working out with people's schedules.
All right, so we're going to keep you on the edge of your seat. So just keep following us, and we'll keep you posted with that, with updates. But we'll have a video with an update with Operation Gabriel coming out, I think, pretty quick here. Again, I want to thank everybody who's listening. Don't forget about Bitcoin Alaska. Wade's been working his butt off on that. And I think by the end of this week or start next week, we'll have the website ready to rock and roll. And we'll start pointing everybody in that direction. So stay tuned for more on that. Huge thank you to Jacob for doing everything in the background and everybody who joined us on the panel today. Lisa, I love having you up here. Eomar, Jacob, Jordan, Mike. I really appreciate it. I think Texas Toast and Pit Petro are up here for a bit too. I want to thank you guys and girl. And so that's it. Get out there, spread that Bitcoin message, and go crush it.